Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle episode 138, Christmas sub-episode A. This is for the week beginning the 27th of December, so I hope you're either having or have had a magnificent Christmas, depending on when you've downloaded this, the best Christmas in the entire history of the human race. And to make it even better, here, as this week's Extra Bugle, is the second half of John and my gig from the Frontline Club in 2005. And if you remember from the first half that we put out a couple of months ago, where we left it off was after half an hour of absolutely A-grade, laugh-a-second live comedy. Here's some more of it now.
The fundamental tenet of democracy is that you should engage people in a mature political debate. So we thought we'd try that tonight. Now, don't worry, you can always feel people recoil. We don't expect you to come out with fully formed opinions on what we're about to discuss. That has been dealt with. So let's just see what the kind of mood in the room is at the moment. What is your name, mate?
My name's Mike.
Hi, Mike. Now, so, Mike, what is it that you do for a living?
I'm a florist.
A florist? Thank you, comedy god. So, Mike, what's your favourite flower?
Stop belittling my work.
Sorry, Mike. So, Mike, as a florist, what do you think Britain should be doing at the moment with regards to Iraq?
Well, as a florist, John, I think it's important to get out as quickly as possible.
Right.
Remove the troops and let democracy develop its natural course.
That's interesting. I thought as a florist you'd want to put, you know, Iraq in a vase of water. Like, you know, otherwise it would wither and die. You know, like one of your flowers.
Yeah, I understand your analogy, but that's not what we florists think at all.
Fair enough. So how about the lady just in here? What's your name?
Yeah, my name's Claire, and I work in data entry.
Hi, Claire.
Hello. Yeah. And yeah. I think that Mike the florist is thinking criminally short-term.
Right.
I was against the war, John, as were all data enterers.
Right.
But I think that now we're in there, we've got a real duty to stay the course.
Interesting point, Claire. Mike?
No, we've done enough harm already. I can only really see us inflaming the situation more.
Well, that's it's interesting. Get the man with his hand up right at the back.
Yeah, I'm a retired postman called Wes.
Right.
And let me tell you, I am fed up of hearing people knock the way that we behaved in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Saddam was an evil man, John, and we've done the people of Iraq a very great kindness by removing him.
That's interesting, Wes. Is that the view of all post office workers?
No, that's why I had to retire.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that. Yes, the lady in the corner up there.
Could I just say hello to my husband, Peter, and my daughter, Rosie?
Not really,
no. Who are currently serving in Iraq.
Ouch, yes. Why not?
She stitched you up there, John.
All right, Mike, this is a lot harder than it looks. When are you going to arrange some bloody flowers?
Oh, yes, stinging put down, John.
F*** you, Mike, you're acting like a tool.
Look, John, you're not treating this issue with the seriousness it demands.
You're right, Claire. Let's get this back on track. Thanks for the voice of reason. So, you work in data entry. Do you feel that the UN should retain some power of policing in Iraq, even after Britain are gone?
Well, myself and the other data entries in my office,
mm-hmm.
we reckon it should probably be judged on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Claire, that is just a recipe for chaos.
Mike, you've had your say.
Oh, Mike, that is just typical of you florists. The situation is far too complicated to back yourself into a corner by sticking to absolutist rules.
You're dodging the question, Claire.
Hey. No, I'm not, Mike.
Oh, shut your data entering face.
Hey.
No, Mike, I won't do that. I just don't see the benefit in tying yourself to a single solution to widely differing problems.
Well, that's a very interesting point. I think there's some support for your point there.
No way, not from us in the Postal Service. No.
Yep.
As a working mother of four, let me have my say. I think Tony Blair should be knighted for what he's done over Iraq.
Well, that's an outrageous thing to say, Wes.
Oh, stick it up your arse, you frigid lesbian hippie.
Whoa! No. I cannot allow that,
Wes. She can live how she wants to live, you fat
That's a nice gesture, Mike, but you'll make things worse.
Thanks for sticking up for me, Mike. I appreciate it.
No problem, Claire. That's no way for anyone to speak to a data entry.
You're both right.
Mike, you botanical f***er, I'm going to fucking kill you.
You're right, Wes. There's no time for that kind of violence. The lady in the corner over there, yep.
I'm Petula Wall from Falkirk in Scotland.
Really?
Hello. And
hello.
As a part-time librarian, I think that Iraq is now overdue and should be returned. Otherwise, the United Nations should issue a very large fine.
That's an interesting point. What do you think? Oh, that is bloody typical! Now, people died so you could have an opinion on things, and you sit there and you say nothing. Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you! Well, I think we've all learnt a great deal this evening. about the freedom of speech and your right to have it. And I think the fact is that we don't treat our democracy at all well here. It's very childish, the statement. I don't know if you saw just before Christmas, I can't remember who it was, but one of the Labour female MPs said that since Labour got in 1997, there's been a culture of bullying in the House of Commons. And there are more MPs in there now, and by more, I imagine she meant some. And apparently whenever a woman gets up to speak, now this was happening, there was a group of Conservative MPs on the opposite bench who were making breast signs with their hands and saying, melons. Now, this is the elected opposition to our governments, and all they can think to do is sit there all day saying, melons. And what started worrying me was there is almost nothing you can say in this world that is not instantly undercut by someone saying, melons. I started thinking that maybe over the last 10 years, women have been standing up in the House of Parliament saying, we must sort out Palestine right now. There must be a single state solution. Otherwise, problems will not only spread around there, but across the entire planet. And just as that was sinking into people's minds, someone said, melons, and the dream died. But the point is, democracy's been solved, and that's not up for debate. Yep,
so what we're going to do now, we've got to, in order to try and fix the world, the most important thing to do, and this is something that's been tried and tested throughout history, is find someone to blame.
Yeah.
So we've got a short list, actually, of candidates to blame for all the world's problems now. We've got a short list of about four or five that we've whittled down from an initial long list of around about 25,000.
You can vote.
Yes, that's it. We're going to let you vote at the end on which one you blame the most. So
how exciting is that? Isn't democracy fun? What a gift we're giving to the world.
Option one is the United States of America. That's our little podium of...
It's the people's choice. Yeah.
It's a very, very popular choice now. But I think certainly it's true that the Americans and the British have not really gone about the war on terror in the right way. In fact, we seem to have based our whole approach to the war on terror on the wasp's nest principle, because as we all know, if you've been stung by a wasp, the best thing to do is to follow that wasp back to its nest and hit the nest with a big stick, and then just keep repeatedly hitting the nest with a big stick until the stripy little has learnt its lesson. So, maybe one day it will bear fruit. Who knows?
But also, it's economically that America are probably doing far more damage. We managed to dig out this year's economics exam from Harvard University, which features this question. It says, Kenya has three apples. America wants those apples. How many apples does Kenya have?
So, what's the answer?
Well, it's multiple choice.
Right.
It's A, no apples.
Yeah, what are the rest?
That's it. Kenya has no apples.
Great. So that's option one, blame America. Option two is to blame big business, as represented by my wallet. Rather inappropriate.
Well, big business's attitude towards developing nations at the moment seems to me to be something along the lines of, oi, Sanchez, look me in the eyes and tell me that your goat is better than my combine harvester. You can't do it, can you? Get out of my office, you dusty fool.
Now, of course, the IMF and the World Trade Organization have tried various carrot and stick schemes to get these developing countries to run their economies properly. But there's a great loophole here, as there is with any carrot and stick scheme, and that is that if you get a big enough carrot, you can actually use it as a stick. If you get a kind of big, pointy carrot, you can stick it on the end of a broom handle and use it as a spear. And if you get some of those little tinned carrots, you can coat them in lead and use them as bullets. So in many ways, the carrot is, in fact, far more dangerous than the stick, and most of us, given a straight choice between being hit with a stick or shot by a carrot, we'd probably just bend over and take the twigging.
Also, it's very important to remember just how good big business are at dodging blame. It's very hard to get it to stick to them. Only just before Christmas, there was that story about how there's lots more salt in crisps now and that it's damaging children's health, and you'd think that this would upset people, but no. Because they hit back straight away, these crisp manufacturers, saying, look, all we're trying to do is make your children easier to float. We're heroes. Next time little Timmy falls into the canal and bobs straight back up to the surface, I expect a strongly worded thank you letter from you ungrateful f***s.
Eloquently put.
Thank you.
also, you know, big business is often criticised for the environmental problems and for a lot of the carbon emissions in the world. But you know, they'd say, well, there's no point doing anything drastic about the environment now because we still don't know for sure with rising sea levels if there isn't just a plug hole somewhere at the bottom of the ocean. And you know, until it's absolutely proved that there isn't that plug hole, let's assume that there is. That needs a bit of work, doesn't it? I'm going to camouflage that silence with a funny little dance.
Yeah. Usually we have to pull out the dance a lot quicker than that, so it's either a testament to you or us, and let's split it halfway. So that's big business. Another example, another potential person to blame is God in his many hypothetical forms.
Yeah, God, he gets thanked a lot for many things in the world. He very rarely gets blamed. You know, we always hear sportsmen thanking God whenever they've won, but very few sportsmen or athletes have the courage when they've lost to spin round and ask the Almighty Lord why on earth he forsook them on the crucial step phase of their triple jump. And it's about time we fronted up.
Yeah. Oh, now, the French government have come up with a very interesting way to combat the problems that religion cause, and that is that they've banned the wearing of religious clothing in all French schools. So it's all about to go. The cross, the burqa, the baguette, the skull cap, it's all going. The baguette isn't comedy fun. But, you know, where is all of this going to end?
Yeah, it'll end there.
It'll end there. I think. But what if it didn't?
No, it will end there, John.
It will end there.
They're a pretty civilised country.
They're a very civilised nation. But what if they weren't, imagine?
Well,
what would happen then?
Well, I think it will end there. They're a pretty modern, developed democracy, John.
Sure, I'm not arguing with that. But I'm just saying, what if they weren't?
I fold.
That's right. The way I see it, they would have two choices, the French government. One, force children to wear as many items of religious clothing as it is possible to fit on top of the human frame. Thus, Catholic kids will be forced to walk around all day wearing big Pope hats, swinging incense around like a Russian hammer thrower. Atheist children will have to wear sandwich boards reading, "This is it. This is all there is, you know. We are just dust, dust in the wind of history." And Muslim children will... Or two, force children to wear the exact opposite of their religion. Thus, Hindu children will be forced to dress up as pantomime cows, Jehovah's Witnesses will be forced to dress up as blood transfusions, and Muslim children will... See, organised religion is, in fact, the answer. Thank God. All of them. And, of course, the real one, whoever he... Or indeed she, maybe, and I'm joking at the end, of course, he.
But the way I see it, that if there is a God, and I do have my doubts, and he is frankly unforgivably bad at his job, he's just been sat on his big, fat, lazy, incompetent, negligent, celestial ass doing jack case shit for almost 2,000 years.
Whoa there, Zaltzman, that's a bit harsh, don't you think?
Yeah, well, thanks for coming, but, you know, with all due respect, your work in the 20th century was a total mess, and you've not started this one a lot better.
Oh, well, really? Well, maybe you'd like to take a look at my latest divine creation.
Where might I find that?
Well, it's in the lectern. Have a look. Do you have it? Yes, that's right.
Well, what is it?
Well, it's a tomato.
Well, I see that, but you've created that before.
Yes, but there's divinely. There's a twist. This tomato has got a yolk. I'm halfway to finishing the complete all-in-one breakfast. I'll put some mushrooms in there, maybe a couple of beans, and wrap the whole thing in bacon. I know you people get a bit stroppy about that, but what part of "I've made the pig tasty" are you struggling to understand?
So we might have called that one wrong. But, you know, with all due respect, you know, much as the world does need an all-in-one breakfast, isn't this a bit pathetic? Haven't you got better things to be doing?
Well, I'm a bit depressed at the moment, to be honest. I'm just bored of being God. I've run out of ideas. I spend most of my time just with crisps all over me, playing Minesweeper.
I'm sorry to hear that times are tough.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Anyway, have you enjoyed the show?
It's been all right. I find political comedy a little bit preachy.
It's a bit rich coming from you, isn't it?
F*** you.
Well, if you don't like it, you didn't need to come, did you?
Well, I can't really help it.
Good point.
Yeah. Can I say something to your audience? You're all going to burn in the fires of eternal hell. There you go.
Isn't that a bit childish?
Oh, you're probably right. I do need a more flexible sentencing policy.
Right. Well, it's good that we've all learnt lessons. So, There are a lot of lessons to be learned. I learned a very, very valuable lesson the other day, and that lesson is do not try and play the offside trap in table football. It causes damage. Anyway.
I had to go and make a phone call. So I couldn't lie to your faces.
So God, I forgot to put a little... this was a symbol for God, but the moment's passed now. Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Europe. We blame Europe. A lot of people like to blame Europe in Britain. And, you know, we've got quite... We still haven't really learned to live with Europe, I don't think, in Britain. We tend to just blame it for everything. Give me a cheer, actually, if you think Britain should join the euro. Okay. And who thinks Britain should keep the pound? Okay. So, that was a very optimistic... Yeah. Sorry? One old folkie. Right, yeah. You do our put-downs for us. Great. Oh, fantastic. But that's, in fact, also the most sophisticated debate on that topic that has ever been held in this country. Yeah. So,
well done.
But I asked that same question at a gig I did in a little town in the West Country called Yatton. It's quite a small-minded place, Yatton, the kind of place that puts the f*** off into parochial. And I made the mistake of asking Yatton what they thought of the euro. Not only were they all animalistically hostile towards the euro, but most of them were still making their minds up about the pound. And kind of hoping we might go back to some kind of pig-based economy, you know. But,
Well, it's easy to turn people's minds around anyway on the euro. It can be done. There was an amazing phone-in on Radio 5. What about this guy phoned up furious? He was screaming down the phone, saying, "I'm totally against the euro. I'm for the pound. Britain was built on a pound. No to the euro. No, no, no to the euro. Yes to the pound. I mean this with all my heart." And this expert in the studio, she said to him, "Well, thanks very much for phoning in so passionately. One positive thing you might like to know is that if we get a single currency in Britain, car prices are likely to drop here." And he said, "What, really?" And the studio was stunned into silence as they tried to take on board the gravity of what was happening in front of them. And she said, "Well, cars are cheaper on the continent. With a single currency, that'll be more obvious. And we'll have to drop our prices accordingly." And it all went quiet on the other end. You could hear the wind blowing into his receiver. Almost his heartbeat was coming down the line. And all of a sudden he said, "Well, maybe it's a good idea then." Is that all it's going to take? Just a single phone call to every household in Britain saying £5,000 off a Nissan Micra. Sweet, put me down for yes. Bonjour. Bon f***ing jour. Crack out the croissants, kids. Dad's going continental. It's a different kind of breakfast, Matthew. Well, put some jam on it!
But then, of course, you get the anti-Europe camp, and they will then point out that rather than Britain going further into Europe, we should remember that every time Britain has been invaded in its sparkling history, it's been by another member of the EU. If you think about it, the Romans, EU.
EU.
The Normans, EU. The Vikings, mostly EU.
Yeah.
And, of course, Argentina, who had a crack at us in 1982, but fortunately missed by 15,000 miles.
Yeah, so Argentina are not in the EU?
Basically Spain.
Well, that's pretty hard to argue with. But it's very the two sides of the debates aren't easy to absorb at the moment. Because, you know, on the one side, you've got the pro-European argument, and they say Europe is good. And on the other side, you've got the anti-European argument, and they say that Europe is bad. So, you know, it's so hard to know who to believe. They both make pretty convincing cases.
It's very hard. It's particularly hard in the European Constitution. We've obviously got Britain is going referendum crazy over whether or not to sign up to this controversial document, which nobody, literally nobody, has ever read. And there's a lot of kind of... it's very hard to tell. As far as I can make out from reading the newspapers, then what will happen if we sign that constitution? Then one, within 48 hours, everybody will be dead. Yeah. Two, if your child falls below certain European height stipulations, it will be reclassified as a dog. Three, Britain won't be allowed to fight a war even if it really wants to. Four, every zebra crossing in Britain will actually have to have a zebra crossing.
Yeah.
This will be ruinously expensive, and there's no way they're going to let us paint a horse again. And five, if we sign up to that document, Europe will have our signature and will then be able to forge it, signing us up for treaties, legislation and theatre trips that we know absolutely nothing about. I will not let my nation sit through Blood Brothers ever again.
No way. It's
this sentimentalised bullshit.
It is. It's, you know, you don't, you know, say it with words, not with a song. quit hiding behind your sycophantic melodies. Anyway, this isn't the platform for that. The fact is, people won't read the Constitution because it's too long. It's massive. It's absolutely enormous. The way I've lived my life this way, and I don't plan to stop now, if you can't say something in under 60 pages, don't say it at all. I've read the start of a lot of books. I don't know what happens at the end of the Bible. Don't spoil it for me. I presume he opened a donkey sanctuary. He did so love those donkeys.
Also, you know, there's a lot of scaremongering in the press, particularly about immigration. Mm. With the accession of 10 new EU member states last year, we're expecting a flood of swarthy Bulgars coming over here and munching on everyone's biscuits, and it never really happened. And I think it's time to accept that statistically immigration is a very good thing for Britain. And I'm the son of an immigrant. My father moved here from Southern Africa in the 60s. And I think immigration is clearly statistically a good thing. If you look at the facts, in the average country, 13.4% of the adult population are s***s. Now, that leaves, by deduction, 86.6% who are not s***s. Now, it's well known that a s*** is far less likely to emigrate than someone who isn't a s***. So the more immigrants Britain allows, the further the s*** to not a s*** balance tips towards the not s***. Conversely, in those countries where from the non-immigrants are emigrating, they're left with a higher level of making those who are not in those countries still more likely to want to emigrate. Hence, by the process of inverse osmosis, Britain becomes the least country in Europe. But the government will not let you hear that because they fear the truth. Well, that one's back in the laboratory tomorrow morning, being tested on my little funny mice. But it's certainly true that immigration is a far more complex issue than it was, say, 200 years ago, when Britons were emigrating all around the world to places such as India. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Is it true you want to move into our country?
Yes.
Did you mind if I ask you a few questions first before you march in?
If you technically must.
Okay. Well, it's just procedure, really. So,
certainly.
So, firstly, why do you want to move into our country?
To impose our vastly superior culture on you, you uncivilized yobs.
You're very kind. Okay. What are you hoping to? Just a few questions now.
Yep.
How are you intending to treat our wildlife?
What are my options?
Well, you can either A, treat it as one of nature's treasures to be nurtured and protected.
What B?
Or you can, armed only with a massive gun, shoot it in the name of sport.
Oh, B! Oh, bloody hell! What a B! Yes, put me down for a capital B. My wife needs some new carpets, and little Timmy needs some new tusks for school.
Great. Tusks. Tusks for school. Great. Okay, a few yes or no questions.
Fire away.
Now. Will you be intending to steal all of our natural resources?
Yes.
Yes, okay. when you leave, will you leave our country socially and economically stable?
No.
No. Okay. Frankly, it's been a long time since we did this, and
I'm doing fine.
You are doing fine.
My bits are shorter.
what are you hoping to take away? Right. Sorry. This.
It's all very well you bailing out.
you're now stuck.
I'm still in character.
Have you got anything else to say?
Well, evidently not. I can only respond to questions. I can't think on my feet.
What do you want to? I'm afraid we don't seem to have the standard imperialism box that you.
Oh,
want
don't
to.
Try and. I'm off to make a phone call.
To be honest, I'd forgotten we were going to be doing that. And
no, that's my mom again. I think that the problems of immigration can instantly be solved when, and I mean when, we win the Olympic bid in this country, which we will do. There's no doubt about that. What's our competition? Paris? No, I'm afraid not. New York? No way. Madrid? Not anymore. And also, we came up with sport. That's why we'll win it. We invented sport. In Britain, don't listen to what the ancient Greeks said. That was gay wrestling. That doesn't count. That was a showcase sport, not a fully ratified event. Anyway, in fact, we need it more than Paris do. We need it more than any of them do. If we win that bid, it will solve all our domestic problems. We currently have an immigration policy in Britain that is extremely racist. But when we win that bid, you watch the borders get relaxed for anyone who looks even half good at sport. They'll have time trials set up at Dover. Just a guy with a stopwatch saying, look, if you can run 100 metres sub 10, I've got a passport with your face on it right here. 9.79, welcome to Britain! We need those games. Bring the games to Britain. And in fact, as Andy and I were travelling here on a packed rush hour tube, we were thinking, London backs the Games. we can host it. I think the whole Olympic bid is really going to come down to one question, and that's, Sebastian, look me in the eye and tell me that you can run these games without screwing it up. Don't look at your shoes, Sebastian, and mumble. Look, you can't. I'm going to Paris.
So so we move on with the gig? Right. So those are the categories for blame. We've got America, big business, God, Europe. So after three, say which one of these you blame the most. One, two, three.
America!
Right. Well, I think that kind of proves, that demonstrates quite how deep the rivers of apathy do run. That all you had to do to vote there was say a word, and yet we still had around about a 12% turnout. So,
and that the loudest man got the overwhelming yes. majority.
That's yes. right. So I guess now what we've got to turn to after that show fell off its hinges is terrorism. Clearly, it's a major problem affecting the world today. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's time to try and be a bit more positive about it. The world's been torn apart by disagreements on the war on terror. But, you know, I personally was strongly opposed to the war in Iraq. But I've tried to understand now that there were some very good reasons for invading Iraq. And I guess there were some good reasons. Firstly, let's face it, a win's a win. And we simply have to start winning the wars on Earth if we want to qualify for the intergalactic wars. And that is where the big money really lies these days. Secondly, because we now have indelible proof that the Iraqis were on the brink of developing witchcraft, and I don't want to grow up in that kind of world. And thirdly, because we had to find the weapons of mass destruction. Clearly, the best way of finding weapons of mass destruction, as we all should have learned from basic school chemistry, was just to bomb every single building in Iraq and see with what colour flame they burned. And just take an aerial photograph, we'll know if they contain naughty weapons or chalk and children. Problem solved. So,
well, that's
that's yeah. too slow. So, but it's very hard to know as well what's going on because we can't trust the press. They're so full of misprints. Just last year, in fact, not to do with the war on terror, there was a massive misprint on the front page of The Guardian in Britain. Said Ronald Reagan dies at 93. Clearly, a big misprint. They missed the hyphen. It was supposed to say Ronald Reagan dies at 93, as he sadly passed away midway through a best of 25 frame snooker match against Mikhail Gorbachev. And it was very bad luck for Reagan. He'd opened up a six-frame lead from quite magnificent tactical snooker. You know, everyone expected Reagan to go in and smash the Reds all over the place, but he didn't do that. He's played a really tight, cagey safety game, and eventually Gorbachev got impatient and broke the Reds up himself. And you may not laugh, but I challenge any of you to find a better Cold War snooker analogy than that anywhere in the Paddington area tonight.
The fact is, now is the worst possible time for any of us to be judging whether the war on terror has been successful or not. Throughout history, the media have judged very differently at the time than they have done years and years later. Now, I found this incredible review of the Second World War in The Spectator recently, and it makes some amazing readings. Listen to this. Derivative to the point of tedious burlesque, this war lacked the attritional intensity of its far superior predecessor. 2 stars! I mean, That's an absolute slamming.
That's pretty harsh. That was a good war. Not a good thing, but a good war. This is what The Guardian had to say about the Iraq War, the 2003 Iraq War. It said, this crass abomination of a revival has been clumsily directed, poorly thought out, and was predictable from start to finish. Its messy, drawn-out ending makes one yearn for the days of the Rwanda Children's Theatre's 1990s masterpiece, Civil War, a spectacular effort that somehow didn't draw the audiences it so richly deserved.
Where were the audiences then? But The Sun very much liked the Iraq War, as you may be aware. They reviewed it like this. Crash! Bang! Wallop! Take that, Mohammed! Brilliant! So, you know, they loved it.
But, to be fair to our government, they have been looking at the root causes of global terrorism. They've had an official inquiry looking into it. Obviously, they've had a lot of inquiries in Britain, had the Hutton inquiry and the Butler inquiry. They've had the Wootton inquiry looking into the fundamental causes of global terrorism. It's due out next week, but I've got a leaked copy here from a friend of mine who works in Parliament. So let's see what Lord Wootton has to say about the root causes of global terrorism. Once upon a time, there was a magic twig called Clive. So it seems, once again, the government haven't really addressed the actual nub of the issue. Yeah. Although, to be fair to Lord Wootton, his remit was only to look at the effect of magic twigs on global terror. But even so, I think he was off the mark to pin so much of it on Clive. It just smacks of a cover-up.
Scapegoat. Scapegoat. But,
It's only true also that we're still in Iraq. We've not been welcomed in by the Iraqis, even now after they've had their elections, as the liberating heroes we promoted ourselves as. And I think we've been welcomed very much as you would all probably welcome an arsonist who set fire to your house, watched it burn for a bit, then bravely gone in, put out quite a lot of the fire, and emerged triumphantly grasping one of your two cats, saying, "Rejoice, I've saved your only cat." To which you would probably respond, "I actually had two cats." And they would say, "You have one cat." And you would say, "You've just burnt my house down." And they would say, "Rejoice, I've saved your only cat." And you would say, "Can you build my house again?" And they would say, "Look, it's purring."
the language that's being used as well at the moment is hugely incendiary. You've got, you know, it's hard to know, when you think about it, you know, where America might attack next, Syria. It's impossible to even make an educated guess at who's next in line, Syria. You just cannot possibly say, because Condoleezza Rice made remarks about Iran, saying that you know that they want to not step out of line. And the Ayatollah, it's catching this kind of aggression. The Ayatollah, if you saw, hit straight back it by calling America a seven-headed dragon with Zionist brains. And all the time you've got Kofi Annan jumping in the middle going, "Whoa, whoa, we're all saying things we don't mean here. Let's take a time out. Let's all go back and apologize." Kofi Annan, I think, is one of the greatest heroes in the modern world at the moment. He's got now that look of dancing madness in his eyes of someone who's just one more argument away, one more petty squabble between nations away from being found pissed amongst the bins at the back of the UN going, "Oh, fuck yourselves then! Blow yourselves up, see if I care! I wanted to be a snooker player anyway!"
Well, I think Iran is probably the front runner at the moment to be next in the war on terror, largely just to save on printing costs.
Yeah. But, it's an environmental thing.
I'd like to see us branch out from having a war on terror and attack some of the other main threats to the world, such as water, to have a war on water, and it's been holding us to ransom for far too long. Drink me or you'll die. So, one of the most arrogant of all compounds, a disgrace to the good reputations of hydrogen, and oxygen. It must be stopped. Have you got any better ideas?
No. Good. Oh, no better ideas than that.
I think what we really need to do, though, is just kind of calm the whole world down, because everyone gets too het up about things. And John and I have actually set ourselves up as a charity, an official charity, and we're going to be appealing for your calm tonight.
Because people are constantly screaming, saying, "Well, we must have calm here. Yeah. Please bring us calm." But
they're always appealing for calm, and they never get that calm. And that's because those appeals are very badly organised. So hopefully our appeal will be better organised than that.
Yeah. We're going to be using the emotionally manipulative use of classical music. We're not going to make any apology for that. This is a very, very important cause. This is an appeal for calm. As the world slides towards the edge of chaos, please send us any of your spare calm that you can to help us calm this world down.
Please. Any calm you can spare will help out. Whether it's just one Radox bath bottle could in fact calm an Israeli soldier down so much that he'd probably buy a Palestinian kid some nachos. Mm.
This is Harry the Hand. Harry wants your credit card details. Shh, now Harry, stop being so cute.
So, please, we can change the world, so please just send us £10 a month or whatever you can afford, especially if it's more than that.
Mm. Especially if it's more than that. Shh, Harry.
Poor little Harry, have some sympathy.
Please, calm down.
Just calm down.
It was ages ago.
Whatever it was f***ing ages ago.
And, you know, if that doesn't work, we've got nothing. Ball's back in your court. But so what we thought the world needed to pull the whole thing together is a treaty.
Yeah. Now, you might think, you know, a treaty is quite an obvious thing, but they don't work, treaties. They've never worked. There are a number of reasons for this. Firstly, the word treaty itself is very, very misleading. It sounds like it's going to be full of treats, but it's not. It's mostly full of clauses, which aren't nearly as much fun.
Yeah.
You can't go trick or clausing.
No, you can't.
In fact, in that regard, it's one of the biggest marketing-led anti-climaxes, along with the cream cracker, which fails to deliver on both a taste and a psychological level, and, of course, the death slide, which so rarely lives up to its intriguing billing. So history's littered with failed treaties. You look at Versailles, the Treaty of Versailles at the end of the First World War. That failed because it did not recognise that that fight had not finished. That was merely the first in a best-of-three series.
That's right. Fingers crossed for the third. And the Kyoto Treaty is, you know, on its way to failing right now. The reason America didn't sign it. Now, why didn't America sign it? Well, probably, let's think of it from their point of view, because Kyoto is in Japan. And America haven't really forgiven Japan since that whole permission to land, not granted, I'm bloody landing anyway, kaboom. That kind of behaviour is proven to stick in a nation's throat.
Comedy's educational as well as entertaining. But also, you know, we're still really paying the price for the failure of all those weapons treaties. Think back to the 70s and 80s, all those weapons treaties being signed, then they all missed out one very important clause that should be in all weapons treaties. If you ever find yourself writing a weapons treaty, whether professionally or as a hobby, please do remember to include this crucial clause. I think the world would be a different place if it had been included. And that clause is, do not, under any circumstances, sell major ballistic weapons to anyone who has a 50-metre-high portrait of themselves somewhere in their capital city. Yes. It just seems so blindingly obvious now.
But when you hear it out loud, it's like you've always known. But somehow it's not. So what we thought we'd do to find out what you want in this treaty for this evening to solve all the world's problems is ask you to conduct a survey. This is easily done. But the common problem is making surveys too complicated.
Yeah, so we need some definitive results. So we're going to have to narrow our poll sample down to you. There. Yeah. What's your name?
Mark.
Mark will be representing the public at large.
Yeah.
Today. So, Mark.
Mark, were you for or against the war in Iraq? So 100% of Mark was against that war. That is a ferocious statistic for any government about to involve an election.
I don't see how Blair can ride that one out.
Absolutely. No. Mark, just as a ballpark figure, this is roughly what percentage of you is interested in human rights, more or less?
About
95%. It sounds enough, doesn't it? But
that problem 5% at the end. That's where the trouble starts.
Bad things happen in that lost five. I don't want to tell you how to live your life, but try and find that five. Or at least try and find four and sleep through the other one. The sad thing is that when we were up in Edinburgh doing a version of this show, you beat there a man one night who was less than you to the tune of 95%. He said 0%. 0% of him was interested in human rights, and I was rather reluctant to let him leave the room we were in.
He was a man who all too distressingly illustrated the pressing dangers of wearing tweed.
It's the tartan of the arsehole. And finally, Mark, have you enjoyed the show?
Yeah.
95% of Mark. That final inflection just let him down.
So, I think if we incorporate what Mark's told us and guess what we've talked about in various degrees of professionalism throughout tonight's gig, I think our proposal for saving the world comes down to one very, very simple suggestion. That is that everywhere in the world, absolutely everywhere, there should be little aeroplanes flying around with banners tied on the back, the kind of banners that usually say, "Happy birthday, Steve, 40 years young." But these banners should simply say, "Grow up." Just grow up. Imagine the difference this would make. Imagine Ariel Sharon waking up in the morning thinking, "Oh, I think I might bulldoze myself another village today." He'd look up, he'd see the banner, and he'd think, "Oh, you are right. That is quite childish. There must be a better way."
That's the exciting thing. There is absolutely no global problem that has ever existed or that exists today that will not instantly be solved by the implication of these two little words. Watch this.
"Hey, John, I'm a profitable business, but I could give my shares a real boost by avoiding paying tax and economically violating the third world."
Right, grow up.
You've got a point.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Andy, I'm a Catholic. I'm quite happy for AIDS to be spread through Africa because I don't think people should be wearing condoms.
Can you grow up?
You are right. Can I apologise to everyone concerned, please?
"Hey, John, I'm a politician. I'm thinking about mortgaging the security of my nation and the future health of the planet Earth for short-term political gain."
Ooh, grow up.
Can you really... Let me do this. It'll be really... you're all right. I'm acting like a thumbsucker.
It's amazing. Andy, I'm a female tennis player. I'd like to be paid as much as the men.
Oh, grow up.
You're right.
Come on.
I don't play enough sets. I don't play best of five. I don't have the power game. My rallies go on for longer but don't have the same level of interest. I realise that I have been unreasonable now. I can supplement my income with modelling anyway. Well, some of me can.
There's a
See, there's absolutely nothing that can't be solved with this. You might think it's a bit hypocritical for two men to tell the rest of the world to grow up when our choice of lifestyle and career has basically been one extended childhood. And I guess we'd probably say...
Grow up. Read the banner.
That's a really low shot.
Have you learned nothing?
And besides, we've done it. An hour ago or so, we set out to save all the world's problems. And now, with these two simple words, everything has been sorted out. You're very welcome.
You're all extremely welcome.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Good
night. Thanks very much for coming. Goodbye.
There you go, that was the rest of the gig, and I hope you enjoyed it. It's still as fresh and funny today as it was on that balmy summer afternoon in 2005. Honestly. That's it, we'll be back next week with a best of 2010, and the following week with the first official Bugle of 2011. And don't forget, even during this festive period, you can still buy tickets to my Soho Theatre show. January the 13th to the 15th in London, England. Bye-bye.